It's really a pleasure to me to speak in this section here. We have been discussing the whole afternoon Nachlass research, and especially digital Nachlass research in a very intensive way. And it was a very rewarding afternoon concerning this topic. And so it's a pleasure to me to round this off, so to speak. The last presentations during the afternoon, I think, have shown that Nachlass research is a vital and ongoing activity. This vital activity lasts now already for more than 50 years, and so it has gathered rich history itself. And so my task now in this presentation is to focus on this history of Nachlass research, and that will also mean that my task is to bring you back, so to speak, from the digital world that we have been in now for 5 hours or so. I would like to give us a soft landing into the analog world again. And the first sign that I'm still in the analog world is that I have prepared a handout for you. Some handouts, I think it's 10 or so, so perhaps you have to share it. Okay, what I want to do is... There is, you can pass the handout then around. So, what I want to do is to give you an overview and an idea of a research project that is just about to start. And this project is to investigate and describe the history of editing Wittgenstein's Nachlass. I chose this picture here, which shows Helsinki, because this is the place where the Nachlass research started about 50 years ago, more than 50 years ago. And this picture was taken in March from an office, or from a now opened von Richt and Wittgenstein archives, which opened 2 years ago, 2 or 3 years ago, 2009. And the opening of this von Richt and Wittgenstein archives is makes it, so to speak, possible now to base a history of editing Wittgenstein's Nachlass on a rich empirical database. I will say, of course, something about the materials at this archive during this talk. Good. As I said, it's about to start, this project, so it is necessarily programmatic what I have to say. My wish is that you get an idea of what I find most interesting in this endeavor of investigating the history of editing Wittgenstein. And so also what kind of research I have in mind with this project. And therefore I will make connections to different disciplines. So I hope this gives you a picture what my vision is, so to speak. Nevertheless, there are also pilot studies which I carried out in 2010 and 2011 on smaller pieces. That is, first was the biography, the intended biography written by Friedrich August von Hayek on Ludwig Wittgenstein. And the second was, so to speak, the origins of Vermischte Bemerkungen. That is more or less a von Richt project and could be studied exclusive by only looking at the material in Helsinki without going to other archives in England, where the other two literary executors were. Of course, these two studies are not complete or so, but they were motivating enough to start now a more systematic thing. Good. As you can see on the handout, the first part of this presentation is to give you a background, which is not necessary, I think. And as you're very familiar with the whole story from the birth of Ludwig Wittgenstein until the birth of his Nachlass, or the death of the person. But nevertheless, I mention it. As you know, we have a big contrast between the published work by Wittgenstein, mainly more or less tractatus, small book, and by contrast, a huge amount of philosophical Nachlass of estimated 18,000 pages. Might be more or less, don't count on the exact number, but it's a huge complex corpus, as we have seen earlier this day and as we know. Then, nothing has been published from this later period of work by Wittgenstein, and this consequently constituted the Nachlass. Then in these unpublished writings were given in the hands of three of Wittgenstein's students. It was Rush Rees, Elisabeth Antkamp, and Georg Henrik von Richt. And in his will, Wittgenstein wrote that these three students should publish from these writings, as you can read here, as many of his unpublished writings as they think fit. So they inherited, so to speak, the task, obligation, to produce books out of the papers and documents that they inherited. And this is actually what they did. They immediately started with this work. Wittgenstein died in 1951, and the English edition, or bilingual edition of the Philosophical Investigation, appeared already in 1953. So it's 1.5 years after the death, they already published the one of the most important works. This was the beginning of what von Richt calls the first round of editing Wittgenstein. And you have on the handout also an overview, and here I give you also an even shorter list. Starts in 1953, and this first round, and you're familiar with the books, it's not only, but mainly the Blackwell editions and Durkamp editions, and the last book in this series, which completes, so to speak, the first round of editing Wittgenstein, is The Last Writings on the Philosophy of Psychology, the second volume, edited by Georg Henrik von Richt. Now, taking this suggestion of the first round by von Richt, we can separate other rounds from it, and that, I would say, is basically what we have heard today. There are later rounds. The big project of the Vienna edition, the Bergen electronic edition, and then also later what we've seen here, the online editions, maybe, which would be other rounds. I do not want to qualify them as second, third, or whatever. I think this is not necessary at this point. It's important that I focus my project here on the first round, only the books. And as I said, the archive in Helsinki, which opened 2009, is my starting point for this. And the it came into being because Georg Henrik von Richt donated his Wittgenstein archive, but also his own documents that he collected during the work of editing these books, so the documents of the first round, so to speak. All these were donated to the University of Helsinki and partly to the National Library in Helsinki. That you get an idea of how much this is. It's especially interesting for my purpose is the correspondence of Georg Henrik von Richt and with the other two heirs of Wittgenstein's philosophical writings, but also other correspondence. I say more to this in a second. The amount of this material is an estimated 10,000 pages, rough estimation. Bernd, you are the curator of the archive. Correct me if I'm wrong, or if you have a better estimation.
That's only an hour, I mean, you have that.
Yes, that's...
National Library.
Oh, that's a very good correction here. So if this is from the von Richt and Wittgenstein archive, 10,000 pages, and then in addition, there comes the correspondence that von Richt gave to the National Library, which is alone the correspondence with the other two literary executors is about each about 1,000 pages, also including some from von Richt's own part. So he copied his own letters, so that there's stored almost the complete correspondence. Okay, so it's a huge amount, at least for my taste. I don't know how it is compared with other authors. That would be interesting to hear how large these Nachlasses usually are. But so the Wittgenstein Nachlass and the von Richt Nachlass are quite impressive to me, at least. Good. As I said, we made these two pilot studies on very small episodes, the Vermischte Bemerkungen and the intended biography by Friedrich August von Hayek. And what we found there is a nice view. Yes, it's only on the handout, obviously. You cannot see it here. I gave you a picture where during these pilot studies we found that there are several groups of interest that influence the making of a book. So the main process we have, on the one hand, we have Wittgenstein's Nachlass, which enters a process of editing, of making a book, and on the other side is the books of the first round. And so far, what happens in this process between input and output is basically, well, a black box, or many anecdotes or so, but not yet, has not yet been a subject of research. Having these historical documents now, it's possible to describe these stories that are around the making of the Wittgenstein books. So you can see the core of this process is, of course, the three literary executors and their interaction. But there are much more. There are other researchers, there are the family Wittgenstein and relatives, there are publishing houses that are important, and on the fourth, other editing projects become also more and more important, because it's not only this tree who want to publish from Wittgenstein's Nachlass, but also others. And this process there, what happens there, is to me an extremely interesting story that mirrors a great deal of the philosophy in the second half of 20th century, but it mirrors also political developments or technological developments. If you think just about on the technological developments, they started in 1950 with handwritten letters to each other. And then during these 40 years in this process, it comes the typewriter comes in, then they Xeroxing the manuscripts, or the first copy machines come, microfilm is important, and this goes until the semantic web, so to speak. And you could tell this story by focusing on Wittgenstein's Nachlass. And so to speak, the editing of Wittgenstein's Nachlass is the entrance door of a much richer and a fuller story. And there are different stories around the different volumes. Might be biographical or philosophical important. We will see what is important and significant in each volume. So, now, what is then this kind of, if you write this kind of richer story around the book, what kind of research is this? And I want to answer this question by giving, so to speak, an idea of which disciplines are relevant for such an endeavor, or which disciplines are related. And I give you only a brief snapshot, so to speak, of this. I'm sure this is enough. First, of course, philosophy. The Wittgenstein is treated mainly as a philosopher. He's discussed in philosophy, and so the whole project somehow originates from philosophy. And when we study the history of the editing, this should tell us also something about Wittgenstein's philosophy by understanding why and how the editors edited the books as they did, and perhaps comparing it. The mistakes that they made, or the wise decisions that they made, might shed light also on Wittgenstein's philosophy. At the same time, the editors did the books in a very personal way. So these editions also reflect the philosophical interpretation the editors had on Wittgenstein. At least there's the possibility, and in some cases that might be the case. Example Vermischte Bemerkungen is, in my view, reflects manifests interpretation that von Richt acquired on Wittgenstein's philosophy. So he saw a new aspect in Wittgenstein's philosophy, and the result of this philosophical change is the book, actually. And this book gives us also a new Wittgenstein. Second, editorial story, editorial studies. It can be good seen when you also take into consideration the digital editing that we discussed here. All these are problems and issues, as far as I could find out in a very brief look into what is discussed in editorial studies, which this discipline is confronted with. So the question of how should digital editions be produced, or what is important in making edition, and of course they have also something called Editionsgeschichte, editorial history, as a sub-discipline, where they usually, this is a account of different editions of a book. What I have in mind here is a kind of a broader or wider Editionsgeschichte, which takes into account the context of making the edition. As I just said, be it biographical context, be it political context, technological context, or so, and therefore trying to describe the role that the books and the editing the books played in a certain historical situation. That makes the whole project something as an instance or comes close to what is called intellectual history. It's a discipline I'm not familiar with so far, but when I looked into different forms of the historiography of philosophy, this is a term or new discipline that seems to come up or being very modern, which exactly aims at this, what I said, that taking into account not only the specific context, the philosophical context, but try to give an idea, picture of a whole situation. Well, is this somewhat understandable? Have you heard about intellectual history? Perhaps you know better than me what is connected with this. To me, it was basically in contrast to older forms of writing the history of philosophy, which has been from the German tradition, basically, as there are these geniuses, solitude geniuses that correspond over two millennia with each other and bring out their big worldview changing works, so to speak. And in opposition to this way of conceiving the history of philosophy, the demand to bring in powers of society, of technology, political powers came. Also connected with the names of Nietzsche, Foucault, but that's not so important at this place. Okay, but nevertheless, history of philosophy is somewhat, I leave the classical history of philosophy, but I still have an important feature of characteristic of the history of philosophy within this project, and this is that the history, writing a history of philosophy is always also writing philosophy. So I'm confronted with arguments, I'm confronted with claims, and about Wittgenstein's philosophy, about the Nachlass, how the Nachlass should be treated, and I have to relate somehow to these argumentative claims. So it's also a philosophical work. And as the older historians of philosophy say in Germany, the history of philosophy is, or philosophy, or philosophy is the attempt to ground oneself in relation to the history of philosophy. That is what comes from German idealism. And of course, so this is also part of this, okay, if you want, I can say later more to this. Finally, I would like to stress one point which I associate with this whole project, which is somehow the frame and the main theme of it for me. And this is that I want to bring into focus of a research project the process and the activity of receiving philosophy and caring about what one receives, in contrast to claiming or convincing with own big words. And I think that this is a major characteristic of philosophy in general, that is much more listening and receiving, caring about what one gets, than claiming, convincing, and throwing out one's works in order to convince others. And yeah, I start this project because I feel that this is a statement or a, how you say it, a direction that is worth making these days. Good. Finally, so for if someone wants to have more information, as I said, this project starts now in August, and here you can see those partners who support me. It is financed by the Norwegian Research Council, and I'm very happy that I have all these partners. Most of them are here in this room with me, and so it's the University of Bergen, Wittgenstein Archives in Bergen, the von Richten Wittgenstein Archives in Helsinki, but also at the Brenner Archive in Innsbruck, Josef Rath. So these are all with us here. But also two universities in Germany which helped me in methodological questions for the historiography of philosophy. I hope there will be more partners added to this list. But for the moment, this is what I wanted to tell you. And I hope you have an idea of what I'm about to do the next 2 years. And yes, please, I'm happy about your suggestions, questions, whatever. Thank you.